Hello, this is Karma Haji Nikolaikas. In the first two presentations, we examine the goods and services market to explain the factors that affect GDP. In this presentation, we will analyze the markets for money and bonds to explain the factors that affect the interest rate. The presentation is coordinated with Chapter 9 of Contemporary Money Banking and Financial Markets by Michael Haji Nikolaikas and Karma Haji Nikolaikas. There's more than one way to explain the determination of interest rates. The interest rate we are explaining is the interest rate on debt securities, or bonds for short. The common sense theory explanation of the interest rate is called the loanable funds theory. According to this theory, the interest rate I is determined in the bonds market by the interaction of the demand for bonds and the supply of bonds. An alternative explanation of the theory of the interest rate is called the liquidity preference theory. According to this theory, the interest rate I is determined in the money market by the interaction of money demand and money supply. Keynes introduced the liquidity preference theory in the 1930s when he introduced the concept of money demand, which he called the liquidity preference function because money is the most liquid of all assets. We shall use both theories in our explanations, and we will show that they are consistent. This graph and schematic show the liquidity preference theory. On the vertical axis, we measure the interest rate I on a bond, and on the horizontal axis, the quantity of money. The money demand curve is downward sloping, which means other things equal, is the interest rate on a bond I falls, the quantity of money demanded increases because bonds and money are substitutes for each other in the portfolio of wealth holders. So with a lower interest rate on bonds, money becomes relatively more attractive. The upward sloping money supply curve means that other things equal, as the interest rate rises, the quantity of money supplied increases. The reason is, as the interest rate rises, banks will want to borrow more reserves from the Fed and hold fewer excess reserves. So there will be more reserves available to support deposits, and the quantity of deposits goes up. And since money supply is currency plus deposits, the money supply goes up. So having seen why the money demand curve is downward sloping and the money supply curve is upward sloping, we now explain how the interest rate is determined. The equilibrium point on this graph is point E. At the interest rate I1, the quantity of money demanded equals the quantity of money supplied. So I1 is the equilibrium or market clearing level of the interest rate. Now let's see what happens when the market is out of equilibrium. If I is less than I1, suppose the interest rate is I2, then in this case, the quantity of money demanded is shown by point D on the graph and the quantity of money supplied by point C. So money demand is greater than money supply. There is excess demand for money, and the interest rate rises. On the other hand, if the interest rate is above the equilibrium, say I equals I3, then the quantity of money demanded, shown by point A, is less than the quantity of money supplied, shown by point B. So money demand is less than money supply. There is excess supply of money, and the interest rate falls. So this is how the interest rate is determined according to the liquidity preference theory of interest rate determination. Next, we examine the loanable funds theory of interest rate determination. In this graph, the same interest rate I is measured on the vertical axis. On the horizontal axis now, we measure the quantity of bonds. Note here that the bonds demanded curve is upward sloping and the bonds supplied curve is downward sloping. If an upward sloping demand curve and a downward sloping supply curve surprise you, remember that the interest rate on a bond and the price of a bond are inversely related. So if instead of the interest rate on the vertical axis, we had the price of the bond, the demand curve would be downward sloping and the supply curve would be upward sloping. But we want to emphasize the determination of the interest rate, so that's the variable we display on the vertical axis. Now let's look at the demand for bonds. Bonds are demanded by the public, by banks, and the Fed. As the interest rate rises, bonds become relatively more attractive, so the public and banks will want to hold more of them. The Fed's demand for bonds is not interest sensitive. Instead, it depends on the policy goals of the Federal Reserve. So other things equal, as the interest rate rises, the quantity of bonds demanded goes up. Now look at the supply curve. The supply curve is downward sloping, which says other things equal, as the interest rate falls, the quantity of bonds supplied rises. Bonds are supplied by firms and by the U.S. Treasury. As the interest rate falls, the quantity of bonds that firms want to supply goes up, so the supply curve is downward sloping. Now let's look at the equilibrium interest rate according to this theory. E depicts the equilibrium point. At the interest rate I1, the quantity of bonds demanded equals the quantity of bonds supplied. On the other hand, if we look at an interest rate below the equilibrium, such as I2, we see at this point the quantity of bonds demanded is shown by point C, the quantity of bonds supplied by point D, so there's excess supply of bonds, and the interest rate rises. Now, for intuitive purposes, you might want to put in another step as shown in the schematic below the graph. Excess supply of bonds, the price of bonds falls, and the interest rate rises. Now, look at an interest rate above the equilibrium, such as I3. At this interest rate, demand is shown by point B and supply by point A. So the quantity of bonds demanded is greater than the quantity of bonds supplied. There's excess demand for bonds. The price of bonds goes up, and the interest rate falls. So this is how the interest rate is determined according to the loanable funds theory of interest rate determination. Next, we want to explain why it is that the two theories are consistent with each other. In the simple model that we are using, there are two assets, money and bonds. So the public holds its wealth in either money or in bonds. Then the wealth constraint shown above the table says that the sum of money demand plus bonds demanded must always be equal to wealth. Now, given this constraint, we want to see why it is that the two theories are consistent with each other. The first column of the table shows conditions in the money market. The second column shows conditions in the bonds market. And the third column shows what happens to the price of bonds in the interest rate. So let's look at the first row, the situation where there's excess demand for money and excess supply of bonds. Excess demand for money means money demand is greater than money supply. In other words, the public holds less money than it wants to hold. Now, with only two assets in the model, if there's excess demand for money, there must be excess supply of bonds, which means that bonds demanded are less than bonds supplied. So the public holds more bonds than it wants to hold. With excess supply of bonds, the price of bonds falls and the interest rate rises. So now we know that interest rates will rise if there's excess supply of bonds, and since when there's excess supply of bonds, there's excess demand for money, interest rates rise in this case also. The next row, of course, shows equilibrium. Money demand equals money supply. The public holds the quantity of money that it wants to hold. So that means with two assets, bonds demanded must also equal bonds supplied. The public holds the quantity of bonds that it wants to hold. And this situation represents the equilibrium price of bonds and the equilibrium interest rate. The last row of the table shows the case where there's excess supply of money. Money demand is less than money supply, so the public holds more money than it wants, which means there must be excess demand for bonds. Bonds demanded greater than bonds supplied. The public holds less bonds than it desires. Excess demand for bonds means the price of bonds goes up and the interest rate falls. So the interest rate falls when there's excess demand for bonds and when there's excess supply of money. So we see that these two theories are consistent with each other. Having established the consistency, we'll now use the two theories to explain factors that affect the interest rate. We start with our usual intuitive picture, in this case, of the money market. In the box, we see the equilibrium condition for the money market. The money market's in equilibrium when money demand equals money supply. And money demand depends on interest rates and on exogenous variables, and money supply depends on interest rates and exogenous variables. Now, we know that the exogenous variables are the variables determined outside of the model. In the case of money demand, for instance, the tastes of households and the state of financial technology would be exogenous variables. In the case of money supply, the policy tools of the Fed would be exogenous variables. So we feed in from outside the model the exogenous variables that reduces money demand and money supply to a function of the interest rate. We set money demand equal to money supply and solve for the interest rate. Now, changes in the exogenous variables are going to throw the market out of equilibrium and cause the interest rate to change as well. This next slide shows the intuitive picture of the bonds market. Okay, so in the box, we've got the bonds demand that are a function of the interest rate and exogenous variables. Bonds supplied are functions of the interest rate and exogenous variables. Again, we feed in from outside the exogenous variables, find bonds demanded and bonds supplied as a function of the interest rate, and then we solve for the equilibrium interest rate. And the interest rate changes when the exogenous variables change, throw the market out of equilibrium. So let's now use the graphical model to explain factors that affect interest rates. We start here with a change in a policy parameter. We're going to examine the case of open market operations by the Fed. Open market operations are the main policy tool of the Federal Reserve. And here we're examining an expansionary open market operation where non-borrowed reserves in the system go up. So in the graph, the initial equilibrium is at 0.1. At that point, money demand equals money supply. And we see in the label of the money supply curve that the level of non-borrowed reserves initially is NBR1. Now look at the schematic under the graph. The Fed initiates an open market operation by going into the market and buying more treasury securities from security dealers. So we use the symbol B for treasury securities, B being bonds, bills, so on. Okay, so B sub F goes up. Treasury securities purchased by the Fed rise. Okay. When the Fed goes out and buys more treasury securities, it creates reserves to pay for them. These reserves are called non-borrowed reserves. So banks now have more reserves, which, because they don't earn interest, banks don't want to hold non-interest-bearing excess reserves. So banks make more loans and create more deposits. And in doing so, the money supply rises. Okay. So if we go back now to the graph, we see at the initial equilibrium interest rate, I1, the money market will no longer be in equilibrium because the money supply curve has shifted to the right. So now there's excess supply of money at the initial equilibrium interest rate, I1, and that excess supply of money is shown by the horizontal distance between 0.1 and 0.1 prime. So in response to the excess supply of money, the interest rate falls. So the new equilibrium is at 0.2. The interest rate at 0.2 is lower than 0.1, so the interest rate falls from I1 to I2. And 0.2 is to the right of 0.1, so the quantity of money has also increased. So an expansionary open market operation lowers the interest rate and increases the quantity of money. Now, in carrying out its open market operations, the Federal Reserve uses the federal funds rate as a guidepost or an operating target. The federal funds rate is the interbank loan rate. So how does an injection of reserves bring down the federal funds rate? Well, if we go back to our story again, the Fed goes out and buys more treasury securities. When it does so, it creates reserves. Now banks have unwanted excess reserves, so they make more loans, including more loans to other banks in the interbank loan market. And this is what brings down the federal funds rate. So if the Fed's got a target for the federal funds rate, it injects reserves until it reaches its target. Okay, so let's now look at an open market operation, but this time we'll use the loanable funds theory instead of the liquidity preference theory. So we start again at the initial equilibrium at point one, where the quantity of bonds demanded equals the quantity of bonds supplied. The demanders of bonds are the public, banks, and the Fed. So an open market operation by the Federal Reserve means the Fed is increasing its demand for bonds. That is, it's going out into the open market, buying more treasury securities. So the bonds demanded curve shifts to the right. So now at the initial equilibrium interest rate, I1, there will be excess demand for bonds. The quantity demanded will be greater than the quantity supplied. And in response, the price of bonds goes up and the interest rate on a bond falls. So what we see is we get the same result whether we use the liquidity preference theory or the loanable funds theory, in that we find that an open market operation which involves a purchase of treasury securities by the Fed lowers interest rates. Now we turn to the secondary tool of monetary policy. Open market operations are the primary tool. Changes in the discount rate are a secondary tool. The discount rate is the interest rate on loans that the Fed makes to banks. It is the cost of borrowing from the Fed, and the Fed sets this rate. Okay. So in this case, we start at point one with an initial equilibrium, and now we suppose the Fed lowers the discount rate. As a result of a fall in the discount rate, banks will want to borrow more reserves from the Fed and to hold fewer excess reserves. This means the reserves available to be used as required reserves to support deposits increases. We call the reserves available to be used as required reserves effective reserves. So the discount rate falls, borrowed reserves go up, excess reserves go down, effective reserves go up, and the money supply rises. So the money supply curve shifts to the right. So in this case, there's excess supply of money at the initial interest rate, and in response, the interest rate falls. So at the new equilibrium, point two, there's a lower interest rate and a higher quantity of money. This next graph shows the same case, the case of a reduction in the discount rate, but instead of the liquidity preference theory, we use the loanable funds theory. So the initial equilibrium is at point one. The Fed lowers the discount rate, which means the cost of borrowing from the Fed for banks is cheaper. So they want to borrow more from the Fed to make more loans and to buy more securities. So the demand for debt securities increases. In addition, a fall in the discount rate means the opportunity cost of holding excess reserves rises. The opportunity cost of holding excess reserves is the difference between the interest rate and the discount rate. So a fall in the discount rate makes the spread rise. And as the opportunity cost of holding excess reserves goes up, banks will want to hold fewer excess reserves. That means there'll be more reserves available to be used as required reserves to support deposits. Now, here, of course, we're looking at the loanable funds theory. So if banks want to hold fewer excess reserves, what it means is they want to make more loans and buy more bonds and create more deposits. So the demand for bonds increases, both because borrowed reserves go up and excess reserves go down. So the demand curve shifts to the right. At the initial interest rate, I1, bonds demanded are greater than bonds supplied. There's excess demand for bonds, and in response to the excess demand for bonds, the price of bonds goes up and the interest rate falls. So, once again, we've shown that these two theories are consistent with each other. The final case that we we're going to examine is the case of a change in cash management techniques. Recall that money demand depends on interest rates, real income, wealth, and what we call a collective variable that captures all the other factors, including technology, that affect money demand. Since the mid-1970s, there have been several waves of financial innovation that enabled the public to hold less money or to hold it for a shorter time and still carry out their transactions. These financial innovations are referred to as cash management techniques. So suppose that a new wave of cash management techniques decreases the demand for money and increases the demand for other securities, in particular increases the demand for bonds. So let's see what happens in the money market. We represent this decrease in money demand by a decrease in the collective variable. So new cash management techniques shift the money demand curve to the left. As a result, at the initial equilibrium interest rate, there will no longer, the quantity of money demanded will no longer be equal to the quantity of money supplied, but rather the quantity of money demanded will be less than the quantity of money supplied. And now looking at this graph, I notice a misprint here. So let's start at point one. Point one is the initial equilibrium. That's where money demand equals money supply. The interest rate there is labeled I2. It really should be labeled, of course, I1. The initial equilibrium is at point one. So the interest rate associated with that should be I1. So we go back, we start at point one, that's the initial equilibrium. Now what we see is the money demand curve shifts to the left, so the quantity of money demanded is less than the quantity of money supplied. So there is excess supply of money equal to the horizontal distance between point one and point one prime. And in response, the interest rate falls. When we reach a new equilibrium, the equilibrium is shown by point two. And of course, we see here on the graph, the interest rate there is labeled I1. So the graph is showing it goes from I2 to I1. But in any case, what we know is that the interest rate falls and the quantity of money also falls. So let's go back and just review this. A wave of new cash management techniques decreases the demand for money, so the money demand curve shifts to the left. So at the initial equilibrium interest rate, there's excess supply of money equal to the horizontal distance between point one and point one prime. And in response to the excess supply of money, the interest rate falls. Finally here, we're going to show the effect of a change in cash management techniques using the loanable funds theory. So the initial interest rate is labeled here correctly as I1. Okay, so the initial equilibrium is 0.1. The initial interest rate is I1. Now, a wave of new cash management techniques reduces the demand for money and increases the demand for bonds. So there's excess demand for bonds. Bonds demanded are greater than bonds supplied. In response, the price of bonds will rise and the interest rate on a bond will fall. So the new equilibrium is shown by 0.2, where once again bonds demanded equal bonds supplied, and the interest rate in this case is lower. It's I2. That completes the exercises that we will examine here for the money market and the bond market. You can try out the model by working on the assigned questions and problems at the end of Chapter 9. Also consider the following problem. Use both the liquidity preference theory and the loanable funds theory to examine the effect of an increase in real income Y on the money market and on the bonds market, and hence on the interest rate. Before you do this, you might want to review the third law of asset demand on page 126 of the textbook. That completes our analysis of the factors that affect interest rates.